Begin, we're up to Perek Beis. Okay, Perek Beis. Achar hadvorim o'ele kishoich Hamas ha-melech Achashverosh. After these matters. Okay, the question is, after what? Okay, after obviously the fact that she died, what does Rashi say? Rashi says, there is no Rashi, but basically after he put his wife Vashti to death, and after everything that we learned in the Perek Aleph, Keshoch, when it subsided, Hamas, the anger, Hamelech Achashverosh, Zochares Vashti, who remembered Vashti, the Eis Asher Asosa, and that which she did, the Eis Asher Nigzar Lech, and that which was decreed upon her to die. Let's see Rashi, Pasagav, Zochares Vashti, Es Yofya Vineetzav. Okay, that's a very interesting Rashi. How did Rashi know that? What exactly did he remember about Vashti? Maybe he remembered her good midos. Doesn't say that. Okay, it doesn't say that he remembered dinner, that she served him good meals. She made his life pleasant. It says here, good morning, I don't know where this comes from, where this Rashi comes from, but it says that he remembered her beauty.
Well, he said the
evidence
explains
it,
that it in other words, nothing that she did, because people wouldn't say,
oh, that's the big deal.
What she did, so that's separate.
Okay.
So it had to be Oyofya.
But that's not Mais Asiya. There's repetition.
He said Zocharas Vashti. He had a visual picture of her. He remembered how beautiful she looked and other things that she.
Okay,
did.
so that's but Rashi emphasizes this, the yoifi, her beauty. Okay, and okay, so remember beauty. Veisasher asasa. That's all the Rashi says. Now there's a very very important medrash. The medrash says a medrash in this pasuk says, Veisasher asasa refers to he remembered the sin, her sin.
Right.
What was her sin? That she brought, she had seven, that she forced Jewish girls to work for her on Shabbos naked. And it was Mida Keneged Mida, even Achashverosh was able to see the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhaga, Mida Keneged Mida, that she was punished in that exact same way. She was forced to appear before him naked on the seventh day on Shabbos. Bayom Hashvi, she forced the Jewish girls to work for her naked on Shabbos. Mida Keneged Mida, she was forced to appear before Achashverosh on the seventh day of the party, which also happened to be Shabbos. That's what she did. And there was Mida Keneged Mida. So Asher Sosa is her Avera. The Eis Asher Nigzar Olecha, the punishment that was Mida Keneged Mida. It's not on, I'm sorry. It's not on? Yeah, it is on. Maybe maybe the battery is out. The battery is out. Okay, no, it's alright. Turn it off. Okay, is it a little bit now? Okay. So the medrash over here says he remembered her sin. He was able to acknowledge that Vashti was a machashefa. She was a risha. She forced Jewish girls to work for her on Shabbos naked. And Mida Keneged Mida, she was killed in that exact same manner. She was forced to come before him on the seventh day, which was Shabbos naked, and she was killed. So even Achashverosh here was able to see the Hashgacha Pratis, the Mida Keneged Mida. Now this is critical, because who was the first non-Jew to learn Hashgacha Pratis and make a point about this? Yisro, when he came, by Yovel, when Yisro came, by Yishma Yisro, and he comes to Klal Yisrael, what does he say? Kiva Dovar Asher Zadu Aleihem. The Pasuk makes a point in mentioning that Yisro, some coming guy, recognized that the Egyptians, they tortured the Jewish people in water. They drowned their firstborns. Mida Keneged Mida, they were all drowned in the Yam Sof. This is the thing which the Torah records as the essential reason why Yisro decided he's going to join Klal Yisrael. Achashverosh had the same awareness. He also, we're recording here, he saw the Hashgacha Pratis, the Mida Keneged Mida, yet, look at the difference between Yisro and Achashverosh. Achashverosh refused to accept the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Achashverosh refused to humble himself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though he saw clearly the Mida Keneged Mida, whereas Yisro did Kiva Dovar Asher Zodu Alayim, he joined Klal Yisrael. So it's a very important point dealing with two non-Jews, and the difference of Yisro, he learned the lesson, whereas Achashverosh refused to learn the lesson. That's a very important point. What? This is also, but it was a hashkach. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be open nisan. It was an awareness of mida keneged mida. Yisrael saw the mida keneged mida. Ki vadavar sher zadu aleihem. Achashverosh here clearly sees the mida keneged mida. He saw Eis asher asasa, her sin and the punishment. Mida keneged mida. He should have taken this as a message to the tshuva before Kadosh Baruch Hu. And when Haman will approach him very shortly and demand that he destroy all the Jews, he should not be so quick to agree to such a plot. It shows that he did not learn the lessons of history. He did not have the Yir HaShemayim as Yisro did. Okay, now the question here is, why did the Medrash feel necessary to comment, to make this comment specifically on this pasuk? Why? This is a nice idea that she indeed, Vashti, she did a terrible avera. She forced these Jewish girls to work naked before her on Shabbos. Mida, connected Mida, she was forced to come out naked and she refused and she died on Shabbos. So the answer is because it says here, the Esa Sher Ososer, Rabbi Mayevsky picked up upon this. What exactly did she do? The sin of Vashti was Shev, the Al. Achashverosh says, come, appear. I'm not. I refuse to listen to your command. Her words, her insulting words, Dibur and Halacha is not the same as a Maisa. So she did not do anything. In fact, she did, her sin was not doing. Therefore, that is why the Medrash felt that being that this pasuk emphasizes the word Aishasher Ososa, it must be indeed that we are referring to her Avera, and we're referring to the Mida Keneged Mida of what happened to her. Al Derech Agaf, he mentions over here in the Mishpat Zohar, very interesting, he quotes the Medrash, why did Vashti indeed force these Jewish women to work for her naked? So we already discussed that left. We discussed she wants to put them to shame. We have to remember Vashti was a descendant, was the great-granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and she wanted to continue to humiliate the Jewish people. That's the simple interpretation. We learned
that was something that Nebuchadnezzar himself used to do in the first place.
Well, that was probably a technique in ancient times. In ancient times, they humiliated people by forcing them to appear naked. That was a humiliation tactic. And then we learned another interpretation, that it was more like Hanukkah. It was more of an approach to break down, breach the meat of tzinius, to tell the Jewish people, why are you tzinua? Why do you cover your bodies? Why don't you take pride in your body? Just like the Umma Osol was a technique in order to contaminate the mind, that you should embrace the culture, and in the secular culture it's a beautiful thing. A person has a beautiful body, it's something which should be proud about and to show off. So this was a technique in breaking down the mida of tznius. Another answer the Medrash over here, I saw on this pasuk here, because the primary Medrash is this pasuk, is she had these Jewish women who do for her embroidery. They would stitch precious stones onto clothing, and she was afraid that they would steal the precious stones, the diamonds. So if you're wearing clothing, so you can hide the diamonds in your pockets, or you can go and so they do that. That's what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you can put it. You can make a slit.
But you get weighed in and out. So
really?
In your pocket. So
okay.
If you weigh more than when you came in.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
So that's exactly. That's what it says in the Medrash. She was afraid. She was afraid that they would steal these precious stones. So the only technique to force them to work, to do their skill labor, was when they were not wearing any clothing. But here's what's very interesting. When did she force them to do this? On Shabbos. Shabbos, these were religious Jews, and Shabbos you're not allowed to carry. You're not allowed to carry on Shabbos.
It was an Erev.
So, no, there was no Erev. Okay, it's a good point. Okay, let's assume there was no Erev. So, it should not have been a problem. it should not have been a problem that maybe you want to force them to work naked during the 6 days of the week because she doesn't trust. Maybe the Jews are ganavim, but Shabbos Kodesh, you're not going to be choshed a Jew. They're going to steal on Shabbos when they're going to have to carry mechal Shabbos to carry from one location Rishus Hayachah to Rishus Harabim. So she says, "No, I don't trust you. I don't trust you. Even on Shabbos, I know you'll steal." So midah k'neged midah. Okay, I have to play with this. The Midrash doesn't elaborate. Okay, this I saw. It doesn't really elaborate, but it's an interesting idea. Even on Shabbos, she suspected they would steal, and Klal Yisrael, that was something that was already too much. That no one would be mechalel Shabbos, and it was not necessary. And therefore, midah k'neged midah. Okay, you have to up to your interpretation what this means. That's why it happened to her. She was murdered. She was killed, executed on that same day. Okay, now let's see here the targum. This is a very fascinating targum. Okay, not everyone knows this targum. Pasuk Aleph. Perek Beis. Pasuk Aleph. Bosar Piskomayo Hilein. Okay, after these events, I'm not exactly sure. Achar. So there's a machlokes in the Gemara when it says the word achar, does that mean it's immediate? And acharei means a distance? Or some say just the opposite. Acharei is immediate and achar is immediate.
It's not mashma. The Gemara says achar is immediate.
Immediate, right. Immediate. So he quotes your medrash. He quotes your medrash in the game. But pashtrat means immediately. So here, all different examples. But there are exceptions. Okay, there are a couple of exceptions. Let me see if I can quickly find it. Beginning of Perek Beis, Achar Hadvar Mo'ele. Okay, here it is. Amar of Ivoy. Okay, this is the Medrash Esther Rabba. In the very beginning, Amar of Ivoy, B'shem Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, Kolmokom Shenema Achar, Samuch, immediate. And therefore, where it says Acharei with the Yud, then it is Muflog, it means at a distance. And then Rabbanon here, Rabbanon Mishum Rabbi Yosi ben Zimra, Pum Fakert. Kol Mokam Shnemar Acharei. This is not the common what we're used to, but it's a part of the Medrash. Just Somuch. Achar is Muflog. Different. Okay, so different. So it's a machlokes. So therefore, the question here is you have to look at this pasuk and interpret the pasuk according to both opinions. So Achar either means this happened immediately after she was executed, he immediately got angry. What in the world did I do? How did this happen? Or Achar means he had plenty of time to think about it. This event that we're going to read now did not take place right away. There was a 4-year gap between the time of the death of Vashti and Esther being selected. It was 4 years. So the question is, did the events happen, this whole process, did it happen immediately? Did the plan, did they start the plan immediately, or was there 4 years passed? And then everything that it says, Shisha Chodeshim, Hashem and Hamar, Shisha Chodeshim, did this thing happen very quickly? So this whole process, was it implemented immediately after the death of Vashti, or the plan, the process of selecting the new queen, did it happen 3 years later? Because it was Shisha Chodeshim, Hashem and Hamar, did it happen 3 years later? And that will depend on Achar.
And that had to take a while until they round up all the women also.
So, right. Okay, so that's the question. Maybe they did it very quickly.
35 to 33.99. So that was
okay. They could do if they want. They could do it very quickly because the Targum is going to say that they already knew. It's like they have a file, just like the CIA has a file on all of us. The NSA has a file on all of us listening to our telephone conversations. So they know. We don't think there's racial profiling in this country. The government, they have in the basement somewhere. They have files on every single person. Okay, now. Okay, before we read the Targum, there's one other point which taught you.
What I have on this is that my focus is whether his anger, which immediately stopped after she was
dead, immediately, kishok.
Anger continued.
Continued for a period of time, and it took 3 years until his anger subsided. Okay, the pasuk says
keep it going.
Right, we want to keep the story going. Now, the pasuk kishoch is translated as when it subsided.
Right.
The problem though is there's a chaf hadimyon. Achar hadvar meileh shochach like v'chamas hamelech she. Chocha, at the very end, at the end of the Purim story, the Chama, after Haman was executed, Shochocha. There is no Chof HaDimyon. The anger of the king truly subsided. Here it does not say that the Chama Samelch Shochocha Kishoch, which the Mepharshim point out that it was not a true, he was not truly at peace, he was not truly calm. It appeared on the outside that he calmed down, but inside he was still kochend. Inside he was still in a state of anger. It was just chof hadimyoin. He really did not calm down because he knew something was not right. Something still was not right. There was a Haman, there was a plan, there was a Mordechai. There were things that were going on. He realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still calling the shots and the miracle is still evolving. Things are still evolving. So therefore it's kishoich, it was not mamish shechocha. It's true, calm would return to him when Haman, who is the source of all problems, would be executed much later on in the Megillah. Okay, now let's see this med, the Targum. The Targum is a fascinating Targum. Opens up a whole new world into the Megillah. Pasuk Aleph, Basar Piskamaya Hoyulein. After these events, we'll translate the word Piskamaya means, you know, Piskam can mean a decree, it can mean a happening, an event. It's not really clear what the Targum means over here, but after these events, Kad when Poch v'ishtedach me ravyas chamrei. Okay, these are expressions which mean poch means to subside. The ishtadach also means to subside. I don't know the difference between these two words. It means an expression of subsiding the anger, mirevias chamrei, the burning anger of Achashverosh. And then he repeats himself. V'chad noch tekoif rugzeki. These are different expressions. The Malka Achashverosh. It's not the point I want to get to, but these are the basic point is after he calmed down, sharei lemitkari, he began to remember Yosvashti. He began to remember Vashti. Does not tell us, like Rashi says, her beauty. It just says Vashti. Misivon, he brought forth. He told them to enter. Rav Rivonoi, his leaders, the people that advised him to kill Vashti. V'chein omrin, and this is what Achashverosh said to them. Halo atu dechayevet dechayevto alo din diktol. Almo de Ovadit. Is it true that you are the Ovados? Is it true that you killed her? That you killed her for what she has done? Omar Lohon, and again, Omar Lohon Malko, and the king went further to say, there's some verbosity, I don't really know the style of writing, but he went on to say, Ano lo gazris lemiktolo. I never gave you permission to kill her. Elohein, but di seul kodomai, the only thing I said is that she should no longer come before me. V'lo alas, two different expressions mean the same thing, that she should not appear before me. Ufakdis, and I gave the command lemede to remove mino malchusa to
royalty. Actually, di teil kodomai, I said that she should come in front of me.
Yeah, and she did not. Okay, she did not. Okay, I'm sorry. And then I commanded lemade mino malchusa to remove, to strip the malchus from her. She should no longer have the title of queen. But I never gave you the permission to kill her. Maybe that's the rationale. What would be the purpose of keeping her alive? What's the purpose of keeping her alive if she no longer is queen? So maybe that's really what Rashi means, because he still enjoyed her beauty. He still wanted to look at her. He still wanted to be in her company, even though he did not want her to have the title of queen. She was not good for the country. She was not good but he still enjoyed her presence.
You mean to divorce her? Or?
Well, it doesn't say divorce. It just says that he never gave permission that she should be put there. The only thing that he commanded was that she should no longer be called the queen. I'll take for myself and whatever. That's what he says. So the people said to her, Amrule. So the advisor said to him, Lo hachi. That's not true. You're a liar. King, you don't say to a king you're a liar. Okay, you get your head chopped off for that. Yeah. This was their mistake.
But he conveniently forgot in the morning after. Well, that's how it is. I said,
Amrule, they said to him, Lo hachi. You're making a mistake, you foolish king. It's not true. Elohein, but, Elohein means but, din diktol gizarto alon. Allah. the command of execution was decreed upon her by you. You said that we should take her out to the gallows. Ba'atas, it was done through the advice, the counsel, Shiva, Rav, Riv, Onayo, from the seven leaders, period. So when he heard this, there was a disagreement between Achashverosh and his advisors. Did he really give the command that she should be put to death or not? Yad to Koifurugze. Minyad immediately, when he heard they were fighting with him, they were telling him that he's a liar. Okay, that's the last thing a dictator wants to hear. Someone say to him that you're a liar. That's quite a bit of chutzpah to say to a dictator. Minyad to koif rugzei, he got furious. Ugezar lemehevei tzilivon, he decreed that they should be hung. The seven tzilivon shav'o rav rivonayo al tzilivo, they should be taken out to the gallows. The seven advisors, shivas roi pnei hamelech, they should be taken out to the gallows and hung. Okay, so without going into the exact translation of these words, which obviously I do not know, but the gist over here is there was a disagreement between Achashverosh and his advisors. Did he really give the command that Vashti should be put to death? He claims not. If we go back in the previous paragraph, we already discussed last week, the pasuk does not say that she should be put to death. If we go back, let's go back to pasuk Yud Ches. Pasik Yud Ches Vahayom Azeh Tamarna Saros the females Parasu Modai Asher Lo Asher Shavu Darmakol Vulchol Shemel Chukdai Bizan Kosi Malnuf Tov Pasik Yud Ches Yetzei Dvar Malchus Milifonov. Milifonov means you yourself. Again, that was one of the chidush, that you should give the command. No longer should this thing be brought before a committee. It should not be decided by a court. But milafonov, v'yikosei b'dosei fras v'dai v'lo yavor, asher lo yisov v'ashti l'fnei ha-melech ha-chashverosh. Look what it says. It's clear. Pasuk Yitzes. U'malchuso yitein ha-melech liruso ha-toiva mimena.
The Rashi doesn't learn like that.
Oh, so Rashi, we mentioned. Rashi went on to say that she should be killed. But it does not explicitly say in the pasuk. It does not explicitly say in the pasuk that she should be put to death. Rashi Nechanami said that she should be put to death. But it does not say that her malchus should be transferred to someone else. And that's it. So here we have, so they went a step further and they put her to death. And here is where the Targum says this disagreement came to be between Achashverosh and the seven advisors, where he said that they said you're a liar, you said she should be put to death, and therefore he had the command issued that the seven advisors should be executed. Now, what's the big question with this Targum? There's a major difficulty which all the answers are not going to really give satisfaction to the question. Who was one of the seven advisors? Haman. Mimuchan. Yeah. It's a machlokes. Was Mimuchan Daniel, yeah, or was Mimuchan Haman? Yeah. The simple interpretation is Mimuchan was Haman. He was prepared for punishment. He either prepared for other people. He made problems for other people, or he was destined for punishment. Yet Haman is alive and well throughout the Megillah.
Yeah.
So how in the world did he survive? And it says very clearly all seven. And Haman was from Mimuchan, was the last of the seven. So someone learning halachic, they want to learn. You know, this is we extract. It's Jewish. This is not a little interpretation, but Haman was in a lot of trouble. He changed his name. Okay, he declared bankruptcy. He changes, that's why he's called Mimuchan here, and later in the Megillah he's called Haman. When he saw that he was in trouble, he found a legal loophole. I'm not, it was decreed, when they came to kill him, it was decreed upon Mimuchan. I'm not Mimuchan.
Who says this?
I changed my name. I'm not sure, I don't remember who says this. I saw this in the Mishpat Zav, in this table called Mishpat Zav. So he changed his name. In other words, there's something deeper to this. He was able to legally find a legal loophole to get out of the decree. Okay, we find today in politics, you hear stories about people who have committed crimes.
Born again.
You find stories. We find today stories of people who are able, they know how to play the system, and they're able to find legal loopholes to do things that the ordinary person could not do. Somehow he was high up in government and he had some good friends in high places, and they found some excuses whatever, he found an excuse to come back. There was a story recently, Obama, he appointed as one, as the news recently, appointed as it was one of the top advisors on Muslim relations, someone to a person he needs now an advisor to advise him on how to deal with the Muslim community, a person that a couple of years ago he fired.
Really?
He fired from his cabinet, from his advisors, because of some corruption. There was something going on, you can Google this. And now he brought him back to be one of his top advisors. So you see, like you say, born again.
When you need the guy.
Now some commentators want to learn from this that everything in the Megillah is recorded to teach us a lesson in Kedusha. Zelu mazeh bar elokim. Zelu mazeh bar elokim. That if a person, something called Shinui Hashem, that if a person, Rahman Litzlan, is in trouble, he can add a name or change a name, and somehow maybe that will be a solution in Shemayim to give issue a stay that a person will have a refuah shlema, or if he has a big problem, it will go away. He'll have a new he'll take upon himself a new tafkid in this world. By adding a name to your name, now Hashem will give me a new purpose to live for, a new mission, a new goal, and that will require me to live more years to be added to my life. And indeed, we do find people, Rahman Litzlan, they do, when they're very ill, they do add a name. And I don't know exactly how you add the name. You make a ceremony, you go before the Aron Kodesh, and you say Tehillim with 10 people, and you say Tehillim, and at the end of the Tehillim, you make a Yehi Ratzon, and in the Yehi Ratzon, you say his new name, the added name. Let's say there's a lot of halachic questions. Let's say the person dies shortly after. The person's very, very sick, and they add a new name. And then 3 weeks later, he dies. So does that mean the new name that they added becomes part of his permanent name, which they add to the Matzeva? Definitely not. Only if the person, in fact, makes a miraculous recovery, does the name then become part of his permanent name. I think of Baruch Saratskin. He was a big Rashiva in Telz. So he was ill when he was very young, and they added the name Rafal Baruch. And he lived. He lived for many, many years. So that indeed became part of his.
Even after you recover.
Well, if the person recovers, then the added name becomes part of his permanent. But if the person does not recover, then now this I've heard a Rav speak that this has become this technique of changing name has become abused today in Eretz Yisrael. A lot of people in Eretz Yisrael, they're very unhappy. It seems, I don't know why they're unhappy for whatever reason. And there's a trend in Eretz Yisrael to change your name. If things are not going the way you like, if you're not making, you know, six figures, so then you go and you add a name, you change your name. What?
Kesef.
Yeah. So there is an epidemic out there where people are just deciding that they're just not happy with the name they were given at birth, and they want to change the name to change their mazel for shiduchim. I think that's what really was discussed. That people are so desperate, they think that by changing their name, it's going to be a miracle solution. Now it will solve the shiduch crisis. Okay, that's not mahalach. But you do at least see here, at least in some degree, a concept of Shinui Hashem, which spared the life of Haman. If this is true for Rasha Merusha of Haman, Halachas Kal Vekama, when it comes to Yoni Kedusha, there's such a concept of Shinui Hashem. Because it is very difficult. The Targum says all seven, he makes the point, all seven of his officers were decreed to die. And Mumbuchan is alive and well throughout the Megillah. Because that's an interesting point. In Echanam, that's what we have to say. That's really what he says. That since his name was changed from Mamuchan to Haman, he appealed. But the other six, I think the Medrash or the Chazal that he's quoting from says that he said to Achashverosh, it's not fair. Even though it's true that you're angry at me, that I caused the death, but I also expanded your powers. Because until now, you did not have executive privilege to execute a rebel. I was the one who gave you that power, Yetzei Dvar Malchus Milifonov. So therefore, it's true, I've caused you tsar by causing your wife to die, but I've also expanded your powers. That should be that should cancel my death sentence. Yeah. And indeed, it did.
You'd be using it right away. Maybe that's one of the things that triggered that huge donation to the offer.
huge donation. That's the ultimate donation, so power. It was a bribe. Maybe one says it's also a bribe, but you can keep the money. Okay. Another point to mention is Zohar and Vashti. We mentioned last week when we mentioned that Vashti's name keeps on changing. Sometimes it's Hamalka Vashti. Vashti Hamalka. Here, when Achashverosh is said, it says Keshech Hamas Hamalka Achashverosh Zohar es Vashti. It does not say Zohar es Hamalka. Zohar es Vashti Hamalka, Malka Vashti, Vashti, which on a very simple level means he just liked her, right? He just liked her as a person. She gave him good company. He complained to her. Yeah, she made dinner. So he just was sad. Yeah.
Her picture or her image.
He kept her picture image. Okay, that's an interesting idea. It really, that's what it says. Yeah. He kept her picture in the bedroom. Okay.
Why is it so far-fetched to say he just loved her?
Yeah.
I mean,
and Hanami. But that's what it says.
Why do we have to look for excuses?
Why do we have to look for excuses?
It was a political marriage.
That's the point. Look, the question was this a political marriage or was this a marriage from love? Right? What was the match? Maybe it was none of the above. It was just pure taiva. He loved himself. You can love a person because you love the person. And then you can love the person because you really love yourself, and this human being is just a way to fulfill your taivas. So what exactly was the purpose? It was a political alliance. After all, he wanted to consolidate power. She was the great-grandmother of Nebuchadnezzar. He here was taking over from the Malchus of Babel. Parasu Madai succeeded the Malchus of Babel. He wanted to consolidate power, and by doing so he had to go marry the great granddaughter. Was it a political marriage? Was it a marriage out of love? Was it a marriage of pure taiva? What was it? Here it says Zohar es Vashti, which would seem to indicate that he really liked her. He really liked her. A marriage out of love. He liked her as a person. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says Esyofia. Asyafia, when he was a Baal Taiva, he couldn't care less who she was. She didn't have any good midos. He just wanted to satisfy his own lust, and he needed her to do so. Asyafia. Okay, so these are all issues which are up in the air.
Part of it, excuse me, that we postulated early on at the beginning that these seven advisors were possibly from the other side of the coin. They were from the Poras. He was Madai, and that's what he used to consolidate the Malchus, was to appoint ministers from the other part of the administration, so to speak, to consolidate Vashti with him, appoint them to ministers under him, to give them a leg up.
Right, but then you go even a step
now
further.
He kills them because they gave him grief over killing Vashti, because they were Vashti followers. And when he killed Vashti, he had no longer had any use for them because they were not happy with his position.
He had to maintain the balance of power.
Get rid of them because they were thrown on his side now.
You're saying you had to maintain the balance of power. Right, I think Vashti, there's always a balance of power. In your cabinet, you have to have representatives of the entire world. So if Vashti is out, so now these seven ministers who represent other countries, they may have too much influence. So the balance of power will only be filled by knocking them out, to knock out all the competition. Okay. Okay, now there's another point the Medrash makes. The Medrash makes this point. This is a general idea. It's a general, which is a very, very, very delicate concept. It says, Zohar es Vashti. Who controls a person's thoughts of remembrance? Now, this week, the last week's parasha is, Vayishkocheyu. Zohar sar mashkmes Yosef, Vayishkocheyu. He forgot him. And the parasha ends. Yiskadal v'yiskadash ve'rabo. Shikha. Death also brings shikha. A person dies. Shikha. This week, vayihi mikeit shenosayim yomim. It was the end. What? The end of what? So some of the commentators, I don't remember exactly, I saw this yesterday in one of the sefers. Some of the commentators, it was the end of the time of forgetfulness. Everything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ain't shikha lifnei chisei chavodach. We say this on Rosh Hashanah. Hashem does not forget everything. Everything in the Megillah over here is representing its malchusa da'ara ke'ein malchusa The Arakei Malchus of the Rakia. The Malchus on this world is just a mirror, it's just a moshul for the Malchus that's taking place in Shemayim. Achashverosh is called the Melech. Melech Achashverosh, and Chazal tell us every time it says the word Melech in the Megillah without Achashverosh, it's really focusing on the Melech Malchi Amlochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there are parallels. And here, when we're describing forgetting and remembering in terms of the Melech, it's reflecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu deciding to forget and HaKadosh Baruch Hu deciding to remember. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no such thing as forgetting. In Shichel Lefnei Chivdecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu at times decides there should be a moment of forgetfulness. In the Sar HaMashkim forgot. Hashem put in his mind that he should forget about Yosef for 2 years. Chazal tell us, as a punishment for Yosef. Yosef was relying too much on his own hishtadlus. Kim zochar zichartani. He said to the Sar HaMashkim, don't forget, there was on his exalted level of emunah, there was a bit too much of hishtadlus that Paro should remember him. Therefore, as a punishment, Hashem says, Pum faker, I'm going to cause you to be forgotten for 2 years to teach you a lesson. But that time came to an end. And when that came to an end, it was the Miketz, the end of the Zman of Vayishkachehu. Even Shikha, forgetfulness, has its limits. Because there is no such thing as forgetfulness in this world, because since every single living thing in this world is derived from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all source of life, Poseches Yodechu Maspia L'chol Chai Ratzon, every single living creature's life is derived from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and by HaKadosh Baruch Hu there is no such thing as Shecha. So when therefore when a human being forgets, it's only really, it's Ki'ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu is deciding that there should be a moment of forgetfulness. But ultimately, even the human being will remember, because a human being's life is derived from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where there is no forget. So, Vayishkachehu, the Sar HaMashkim forgot about Yosef. Vayihi Miketz, Hashem said, now the time for you to forget is over. Now it's time for you to remember. So let me remind you. Let Paro have a dream, and you'll be, and I'm going to put a machshava into your mind to be reminded. So here also, there's a very important point here in the Megillah. There's a theme which appears over and over, and that is remembering and forgetting. Here, the Megillah, it wasn't just that he remembered. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put a machshav in his mind, triggered, now you should remember Vashti. You should reflect. And that will trigger a sequence of events which will bring the ultimate gula. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, he would have forgotten. Because people have a tendency, a mace is nishtakach min halef. And according to the simple interpretation over here, it was more than 3 years. It was more than 3 years, so he would have forgotten. Everything that's happening over here is only a response because Achashverosh was very angry. Why was he angry? If 3 years indeed passed, which is a simple interpretation, 3 years passed, and now he finally goes and he says, okay, 3 years passed. He had plenty of women, obviously. There was no shortage of women that he had available to him to satisfy his taiva. It was just a question of having a political leader. So in the right time, he would decide to select a queen. They have to go through this elaborate procedure of Vayafkein HaMelech Bekidim B'chol Medinas Malchuso to select all the beautiful women, pull out all of the files. This is ridiculous. This was only prompted, this only came to me because Achashverosh, he remembered Vashti. And he got angry. And he executed his advisors. And everyone got scared. And now they have to find the best of the best. And everything that we're going through was only a consequence of his remembering Vashti and his consequences. If he didn't remember Vashti, Mace Nishtakach Min Alev, which is natural, he should have forgotten about Vashti, right? Mace is Nishtakach Min Alev, then 3 years pass, you know, now is a good time to start dating once again. Someone would recommend, he'll go to a royal banquet and they would say, I have a good shidduch for you. You're the king, there's a beautiful princess in another Medina, why don't you go take her out on a date? Check her out. Here's the information, here's her shidduch resume. then this whole thing wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have searched for an Esther, the Yafgate, and all the women, and the Yafgate Pekidim. So basically, this thing is not natural. This whole pasuk is not a natural part of life. Because, as we said a few times, Gezerah Shehames Nishtakach Min Halev Achar Yud Beis Chodesh. It's now 3 years. It's 3 years. She should have been forgotten. No, nothing in the Megillah is happening in a natural way. Everything in the Megillah is not natural. Zochares Vashti. How does it come to remember a human being? That's a midah of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because a mace is nishtach min alev, only by a Kadosh Baruch Hu ain't shichel of nechich sechem vodecha, malchusa da adake, malchusa da rakia, Hashem now wants there should be a zecher, and that's going to trigger a sequence of events which is going to change the entire history. Okay, let's go further. Pasuk Beis, Vayomu Nari HaMelech Mishorsov, Yivakshu LaMelech Naros, Bisulos Tovos Mare, let us seek for the king, let us seek beautiful women. Beautiful women. Let's see, Rashi, there is no Rashi.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe this is what triggers the comment by the cardinal. Because all of a sudden, who's coming up with this idea? The pages, the there's no more advisors. Maybe that's what...
Exactly. That's why the commentators say the Narei HaMelech and Mishar Sav are not the same as the Royei Pnei HaMelech. It's a different group. In Perek Beis, who are the seven people that advised Achashverosh to remove the Shivas Royei Pnei HaMelech Hayoshrim Rishayna B'Malchus? Here, these are different people. These are the Narei, the young Narei HaMelech. They know who the good looking girls, the young folk, the Narei. They're hanging out at all the parties, at all the social events. So they'll tell you who's appropriate for the king. Narei HaMelech Misharsov, Yivakshu, let us seek LaMelech and the Aros Bisulos Tovos Mare. Okay, there is no Rashi. The Targum is not very simple. The next few Pesukim Targum are very simple. Va'amaru Alumei the Malka Mishum Shonoi, the young servants of the king that served, they were Mishamesh, that served the king. Yivun means to seek, Litzroich for the needs of the Malka. Uleiman Bisultan Shapiron Chizu, beautiful young women for the king. Pasuk Gimel, the Afkeir HaMelech Pekidim, the king should appoint officers. Bechol Medinos Malchuso, the Yikbitsu, they should collect. Es Kol Narav Visulot Havas Mareh, every beautiful woman. El Shushan Habira, El Beis Hanashim, El Yad Hegei. Okay, he is in charge. He is the mumche. Hegei Siris HaMelech Shemer Hanoshim. He's a Siris. He's called a Saris. What's the word? The word Enoch?
Eunuch.
A eunuch. A Saris, a eunuch, because one that deals with the women cannot be trusted. So the only way he can be trusted is if he is a eunuch. He's a Saris.
What's a eunuch? Oh,
someone that cannot have children.
Not the computer program.
Siris HaMelech Shomer Hanoshim. Well, that's what it alludes to, because how could a man be trusted with all of these beautiful women?
Interesting.
The only way he could be trusted. What?
We know of that only for sure by
Doniel.
You can trust
him. We know from that from Doniel, Hanani, and Mishael Azariah.
Yeah, but only those who were in charge of the harem itself.
Right. Only for that.
Not necessarily
everyone. Not every single person. Right. But he was in charge. People who had full access. Hegei Siris HaMelech Shemer Hanoshim V'noson Tamru Kehen. They were given oil. The Targum seems to say that fragrances or oils, fragrant oil that was used to cosmetics. Okay, let's see Rashi V'yafkeit HaMelech Pekidim Lefi Shekol Pocket. Now here's a very bizarre Rashi. Shekol Pocket Pocket Yiduo Slo Noshim Hayafos She B'medino So. Is that really true today? There's a file. It says here, Rashi says that in ancient times, every single governor, they had on file all of the beautiful women in their medina. It's shocking. Isn't that shocking? Racial profile. It's not worse than racial profiling.
Okay.
More than gender. They actually had a file, and they can tell you on the spot Who are the beautiful women in the Medina? Well, that was during these. That was during Hanukkah for a 50-year period. They're talking about the Yevonim. That was before. That was. Oh, yeah. It is very disturbing. Okay, this is something. Today we live in a world where we're obsessed with privacy. There is no privacy today. Today there is no such thing as privacy. You walk, wherever you walk in the street, you're being watched. There's a camera, every Dalai Lama's and watch out, they're even listening. The cameras also have audio. There's no privacy today. But in ancient times, there was privacy. At least we think there was privacy. And here it says there was no privacy. They knew more then than they know about people today. Today it wouldn't be tolerated if we'd find out that the government has a file who is good looking, right? Who is good looking? What? So is there someone that went through the whole Facebook and they took everyone's picture and made a file of who are the good-looking people in the country? Okay, it's a little bit shocking. Okay, in Tamrukehen, one of the Tamrukehen, Rashi says, Dvarim hamitzach tzichin, smooth, no wrinkles. Okay, young girl, well, now you not expect a young girl to have wrinkles anyway, but it says here, it's something which you apply to the flesh, which makes it smooth. Kemo umurak, what?
A base?
A base.
First you put that on, make it smooth.
Then you put on the cosmetics.
Unwanted hair.
Okay, whatever it means. Dover hamitzach tzichin. The word mitzach tzichin normally means smooth. Kemo umurak vishutaf, to rinse. To rinse the kelim, to rinse when you utensils. When you put them in the mikvah, you first have to rinse them, make them smooth, to remove the dirt. You have to remove anything which will be a chatzitza. Anything which would be a chatzitza before immersing them in the mikvah, it has to be rinsed. It has to be scrubbed and rinsed. Shemen oreif, so here he elaborates a bit more. It means fragrant oil. Umine samonim, ubisamim, different types of spices.
Cosmetics.
Hametaharin, ume adnin, esabosar, which purify and soften the bosar.
What do you mean purify?
I don't know. It means
skin treatments.
He uses here many words. Tzichtzuch, metaharin, umeadnin. Okay, so you have to ask the experts on cosmetics what all of this is. A billion, multi-billion dollar business. I used to do marketing once upon a time for cosmetics. I used to actually do this. I used to do marketing. It's a billion dollar business, cosmetics, women's cosmetics. Many, a lot of competition. Okay, so let's go. Vinosa, let's see. The Targum text is very short. The Targum pasik, gimel, pasik gimel. The Targum, v'mane, let the king Malcolm apitropis, like in the Gemara, apitropis, v'chol palchei malchusin, all of the districts of his kingdom, v'yichnishun, let him collect yos kol ulemta. Bisulta, all of the young girls, Shapiras Chezu, which have a beautiful complexion, Lishushan Biranta, Lebes Nishaya, to the place of where the women are collected, Di Saman, which is there, the Muson, that has Uvanoin, Di Taman, which is Muson Uvanoin Di Taman. They built a special center. A center for the collection of women, beautiful women, Mismane Hege, which was overseen by the Tsar. The Tsar Hege. The Hege was in charge, Rav Saris de Malka, he was in charge of this matter, Noter Nishaya, he guarded the women, V'yis Gizar Lim Heveyehe, and he decreed that it should be given to them, Samtar Mishchehon. Spices, fragrant oil, whatever this, same thing, I don't know exactly what this means, exactly the same idea, it means cosmetics. It was decreed they should be provided with cosmetics in this location. Okay, Pasig Dalit. And the Nara that will be pleasing in the eyes of the king will rule Tachas in the place of Vashti. Vayitav Hadavar B'yenei HaMelech.
Shemen
Ham, fragrant oil. Vahanara Shetitab, that will be pleasing B'yenei HaMelech Timlech, which will rule Tachas Vashti. Vayitav Hadavar B'yenei HaMelech Vayaskein. Rashi, there is no Rashi. Targum Pasuk Dalet V'ulemta, the maiden, the young girl, D.
sishpar that is beautiful, pleasing, kodom malko, teul le mechsan malchus, she will enter to inherit. Okay, le mechsan means to inherit the malchusa, chalaf in the place in exchange of Vashti, ushefar piskamo, to succeed Vashti, ushefar piskamo kodom malko, this was pleasing, this decree, this idea, this decree was pleasing before the king, vavad hochi, and he implemented this idea, vayaskin. Okay, let's go. Now, according to one opinion in the Gemara, begins the Megillah. There's a big machlekes in the Gemara, from what part, where do we begin to read the Megillah? There are many opinions. Everyone agrees that when you get up to lay the Megillah, you must have in front of you a complete Megillah. And a complete Megillah begins with Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh. But the question is, how much of the Megillah must you actually read? Of course, it's our custom. We read it from beginning to end. And if you miss one word, Lo Yatza. But the Gemara presents a series of opinions of where we need to, where we should begin. And one opinion says we begin with this Pasuk Ish Yehudi. The other opinion says we begin with Achashverosh. Another opinion says we begin with Balaila Hahu. And there's another opinion that says, I don't have it in front of me. And the point is, what is the Iker message of the Megillah? Is it the Tokfa, the words of the Gemara, or is it the Tokfa Shalach HaShverosh, which means, from whose perspective are we looking at the miracle from? Are we looking at, it's my interpretation, are we looking at the miracle from the perspective of Achashverosh? That's called the Toikvai, the power of Achashverosh. Or are we looking at it from the perspective of Mordechai, Tokvai Shel Mordechai? Right. Or are we looking at it from the perspective of Haman? Achar Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh is Haman Ben Hamdasa. So that's a third opinion. Are we looking at it from Haman's perspective? Or are we looking at Tokvai Shel Nes? The miracle in general, which would then be Balaila Ahu Nadudoshna Samel. So if I'm not mistaken, there are four opinions. From the very beginning, from this Pasuk Ish Yehudi Hayah B'Shushan Habira, from Achar Hadvarim Elekish Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh Es Haman Ben Hamdasa, or Balaila Hazeh. And it's a very important lesson. When you study the miracle of Purim, in whose shoes should you put yourself in? Should you put yourself in the shoes of Achashverosh and look at the miracle from his perspective? Should you put your shoes in, put your feet in the shoes of Mordechai, look at the miracle from his perspective, the feet of Haman, or the general miracle from an outsider, as if you're looking, you're studying it from historically, in hindsight of what happened? That's a very, 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 very important, because there's no two people that look at a miracle or look at an event in life the same. Just like a shem shepard sufim inam shavas kach, they're the same inam shavas. The same way that no two people look alike, no two people think alike. And when an event happens, everyone has a different take. That is why the study of history is impossible, because history is subject to interpretation. When you take out a book on history, you are reading a person's interpretation of the events. It is impossible to separate your interpretation of the events from recording the events as what happened. Any attempt to record as a matter of fact, this is what happened in the year 1996, this is what happened. I'll give you a breakdown of exactly what happened. It is impossible to tell me exactly what happened without you mixing in to some degree your interpretation of the events. What?
Certainly as to why an event.
Certainly as to why. But even recording, even the simple attempt to record an event, this is a fact. Every historian will tell you this to be true. Even the tent, even something you want to put down on paper, the bare bones, just in the pure record of what happened without any interpretation whatsoever, it's impossible. You'll analyze a person's words, you're going to see there's going to be some small degree of interpretation of what happened. And that depends upon the person's perspective, where he comes from, what is his hashkafa, what is his background, well, how was he raised. Same thing when it comes to the study of a miracle. There's no two people that will look at a miracle from the same point, with the same point of view. But at least you can try. So the question, the big question Chazal had, and this is a very powerful question, we have to try to understand the miracle. From whose perspective should we try to understand the miracle from? So if you think you would ask the average Yeshiva Bachar, they would tell you, Mordechai. right? Isn't Mordechai the one who we relate to? Mordechai. Or you'll say Esther. Or you'll say, let's look at it from Hashem's perspective, from the Nes, from the big picture of things. Yet it's shocking that none of the above. The way we look at the miracle is, Vayehi bimei Achashverosh.
Talk about giving us a starting point when you have to look back.
But the Gemara terms.
Blame it on Achashverosh. Just remember, not a day, but it happened under his watch.
You're right.
Everything that happened was under his
watch. 100%. But the Gemara, what I'm pointing out is the Gemara says something very shocking. The Gemara says that if you start in Megillah with Vayehi bimei Achashverosh, it means you're focusing on Tokvoi Shel Achashverosh. The Gemara makes that point. The intensity, Tokvoi means the power, which I'm interpreting to mean, it means put yourself, this is what I'm saying is not necessarily MS, but it's an idea. The Chazal are telling you, put your feet into the shoes of Achashverosh and look at the miracle from that perspective. It's very different than when you're putting your feet in the shoes of Esther or Haman or Tokvay Shel Nes in general. Okay, so it's a different way to look at an event. And here is where the Megillah starts from the point of view from Mordechai HaYehudi. Ish Yehudi Hoya B'Shushan Adira Ushmo Mordechai. Who is Mordechai? So we give here some of his zichos. Ben Yair, Ben Shemi, Ben Kish, Ish Yimini. We're very selective in who we choose to trace him back to. Binyamin. Yimini is Binyamin. He, if you would want to trace his lineage, he goes all the way back to Binyamin, the son of Yaakov Avinu. And in fact, in the Targum Sheni, which we don't learn, unfortunately, but the Targum Sheni, it actually traces Zichos all the way back. They're like 20 names. Goes all the way back, generation after generation, all the way back to Binyamin HaTzadik. Obviously here, the Megillah, the Esther, Mordechai, who wrote the Megillah, they selected only select generations because they want to focus on certain midos of Mordechai. So let's see first Rashi. Rashi, or I need the whole passage. Ish Yehudi Hashem Shavu Shmo Mordechai Ben Yoir Ben Shemi Ben Kish Ish Yimini. We skip a couple of generations here and there to get back to Binyamin. Rashi Ish Yehudi. Now, why is he called a Yehudi? It's not so. He comes from Shevet Binyamin. He does not come from Shevet Yehuda. So why are we calling him a Yehudi? So Rashi says Al Shagola Im Golus Yehuda. That's why, to some degree, why we are all called Yehudim. The Aseres Hashvatim have disappeared, and all of us today are all exiles of Shevet Yehuda, Yehuda Binyamin. And the Ikkar was Yehuda, because they were the one that was in control. The Nebuchadnezzar exiled the Shevet Yehuda twice, the time of Yehoyachin and the time of Tzidkiyahu. That's called Golus Yehuda. So since we all have gone into exile with that, we all identify with Mordechai El Shagola in Golus Yehuda. Kol Oysan Shagolu Imalcha Yehuda Hayu Kiruyim Yehudim Bein Hagoyim. So this is a Yesoid for life. We are today called in the non-Jewish world Yehudim, because we are all part of the group that went into Golus together with Malchus Yehuda. They were in charge. And we have to remember, even though the 10 Shvatim disappeared, but Chazal tell us there were some remnants. There's no question that living in Yerushalayim at the time of the Golus, they were definitely members of all of the Shvatim, just not the majority. The vast majority of the Shvatim went into exile long ago. Yeah.
In the Gemara, it says that
did he bring them back? Did he not? Did he try to bring them back? Was unsuccessful? Did he succeed in bringing them back? Will they come back in the future? Will they never come back? All of these are big mysteries. There are many opinions. The Gemara presents different opinions on this matter, and among those opinions are also all subject to interpretation. So it's a big, big mystery. What exactly happened to the Aseres HaShvatim that were exiled by Sanherif approximately 200 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash? Sanherif exiled the Aseres HaShvatim in three waves.
3187 was the first.
The first wave.
Reuven got the Chatzis Shevet Menashe, 3187. And then it kept going every 20, 30 years, another Shevet, another Shevet.
Three major waves of exile by Sanherib, what happened to them? But everyone agrees that not every single day, today among us, living among us in Golis, we don't know how to make this, how to test, but someday there will be some DNA test where we'll be able to detect in a blood sample, you come from Shevet Dan, Shevet Gad, Shevet Zvulun, Shevet Yisachar. How could it be, but they all went into Galus? No, it means the majority of the Shevet went into Galus, but there were some survivors, or some people that decided to stay in Yerushalayim. So even those who were exiled together with Shevet Yehuda, which was the majority of the Jews living at that point in time, and also they were the authority, they had the authority in their hands, they were the leaders, everyone is toffel to Yehuda, we're all called Yehudim, at least according to this Rashi. And there's another reason why we're called Yehudim, and now let's see what it says over here. Shevet Acher, he needed to come from another Shevet. Okay, the other reasons Chazal give is because anyone that denies Avodah Zarah is called a Yehudi. Yehudi means to be Hoda. Hoda means to admit. To admit that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam. To deny the existence of idols and in the Umma, when we are in Golus, it is the nature of the Umma's Olam to worship idols. We who are Moida to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we give Hoda to Hashem, acknowledge that there, admission that there is a Creator, so that also is a reason why we're called Yehudim. And in fact, Chazal used this term in reference to Mordechai, because Mordechai refused to bow down to Haman. Haman had tattooed upon his chest the name of an idol, and Haman wanted the Jews to bow down before him, to bow down before the idol. Mordechai refused, and that's why he's called a Yehudi. And we'll see this idea in the Targum in a moment. Yeah?
Another variant of that is that he was a Yehidi.
So we interchange the hay with a ches. The hay and the ches have a similar appearance. They're not the same in sound, but they're similar in surah, just a small difference. So yichidi, to acknowledge the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or to be a yachid. Avraham ho'ivri. Avraham was on one side of the world, and everyone else was on the other. Only Avraham saw the truth. Klal Yisrael is the only nation that is makir, the yichido is unique in their mission to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ish yimini, Rashi says, mibin yamin haya, kach peshutai. Rabbi Seinu darshu, marsher darshu. They interpret this what they interpret, so there are a number of interpretations. So let's hold back for a moment. Let's just first, the Targum really tells us what the interpretations are. So let's write away to the Targum. Pasuk Hey. Okay, it's a long Targum.
Israeli.
What?
Could he have been called Yisrael?
No, so he's not called
from Yaakov, and Yaakov
is a Yisrael, so we don't do that. That's
right.
The
we don't see that.
So we don't see this idea to call Israel, right? Yisrael. That's it's a chiddush. That's a very, that was a novelty. Why we're called? There was a major debate when the state was founded. What should we be called? There were many suggestions. Yehudim. I don't remember. Only thing I remember is, if you want to hear online, Rabbi Stephen Przanski. Stephen Przanski has a series of lectures on history of the Medina, of Israeli history, and he has there a fascinating lecture on how it came to be that it was selected the name Israel, which really means the Israel, for the state, for the name of the state. It wasn't so simple. It was a fierce debate as what should... They did not ask the Gedolei Yisrael. The people who made the decision were not the people sitting and learning. And it was... What? I don't think it was his idea, Israel. I think he opted for another name. I don't remember. I really don't remember. If you can go online, yutor.org, Stephen Przanski, there's a series there on Jewish history, on the state of Israel, and one of those lectures, you figure out the year, he has a very detailed discussion of exactly what happened. What happened and how it came about, the name Israel. But he's asking a very good question. Why Mordechai is called an Ish Yehudi? Not an Ish Yisraeli. Okay? And Rashi says we're all called Yehudim because we have all gone into exile with Shevet Yehuda. right? Is it so? I mean, was this part of the conversation when they were deciding what to name the state? This Rashi, and on Megillah, on the fact that Mordechai was called Yehudi, I don't know. But let's see what the Targum says. Out of time, is very quickly we're on the Targum, then we'll have to continue tomorrow. But let's see the Targum. Givar Chasida Umoide Umatzle. Three different terms the Targum uses to define Mordechai. He was a pious man. He was a Moide, a person that admitted. Admitted what? Either means to give thanks. You acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu by thanking Him. That's one translation of Moideh, to give thanks. Or Moideh means to acknowledge Hashem's existence, in contrast to the Umos HaOlam who deny Hashem's existence. Umatzlei, he was a person that was steeped in prayer. All of those three are the words Kadam Eloka before Hashem Alameh. He prayed before Hashem for his nation. All of those three terms are used by the Targum to translate the word Yehudi. Three beautiful terms for Yehudi. A pious man, a man that gives thanks to Hashem, and a man that prays to Hashem on behalf of his nation. Hava b'shushan b'ranta, u'shmei Mordechai. Iskere, why is he called Mordechai? Where does that name come from? Mor Dirar. He is compared to the finest spices. Al Dahava Misil. Misil means to be compared. Lemera Dachya. Lemera Dachya is the most exalted, select spice of the Yud Aleph Samamonim that was used in the Mishkan and Beis HaMikdash. There are Yud Aleph, there are 11 ingredients that were used to make the Samamonim, to make the Ketores, and the most expensive, the most unique, the most fragrant among them that stood at the head was the Morei Dachya. Okay? And then Mordechai is Nutrikin for Morei Dachya. Haman, what was the on the other end of the spectrum of the Yud Aleph Sanmanim? The Chelboina. The Chelboina, in fact, as I'll say, had a foul fragrance. Not a fragrance, an odor. An odor means it's foul, fragrance means it's pleasant. The chalboin had a foul odor. Yet it's a gezeres hakosef that in the 11 ingredients, the chalboin should be included to teach us that a tzibor includes Rosh Tevos, tzadikim, beinonim, urishahim. Even the Rishayim have a place in Klal Yisrael. There's always hope they'll do tshuva. So we have the chalboin. Haman has the same gematria as Chel Boina. So we have among the spices the choice spice, Mori Dachya, and the other extreme is the Chel Boina. The Mori Dachya represents Mordechai, and the Chel Boina represents Haman. And these together, the extremes came together in this generation to bring a fragrance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring salvation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And being that Haman also participated in this fragrance, that is why he was rewarded, could you believe? Shebnei Banav Shel Haman Lamdu Torah Bibnei Barak. Even Haman HaRasha, the Hitler of the generation, he was worse than Hitler. He almost succeeded. One day, shocking. It's really something which we can't grasp. B'nei Balnav Shel Haman was zoicha to learn Torah b'nei Barak. How could that be? Because Haman is also part of the Yud Aleph Samamonim of Ketores, the Chelbina, the one that gives off the odor. But it still goes on the Mizbeach. It still was an ingredient which produced a fragrance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm just saying words, because to comprehend what these things mean is really beyond our understanding. Okay. Al Dahava Misil Lemor Dachya Bar Yoy. Why is it called Bar Yor? Bar Yor, Bar Shim, Bar Gera, Bar Kish. Gavra de Min Shevet Bin Yamin. Okay, he's not going into, we'll have to leave the name for the Medrash for tomorrow, the name, we're out of time. But just to finish up, he's from Shevet Bin Yamin. Who is Shimi? Who is he? Why is he called here Bar Shimi? Because he is a descendant of Shimi Ben Gera. Who was Shimi Ben Gera? He uttered a klola. Klola Nimretzes?
Yes.
Klola Nimretzes, an explicit curse to David. When David was running away from Avshalom, he met Shimon Gera on the street, And Shimon Geri said, good for you, David. Deserve. So you get what you deserve. Your son should kill you. You should get what you deserve because you took away. Why? Because you took away the Malchus from Shaul. You're a married Malchus. You have no right to be a Melech to begin with. The Malchus belongs to my ancestor. Shimi ben Gera was from Shevet ben Yamin. He was a descendant or a relative of Shaul HaMelech. So he was furious. How dare you take the throne for yourself? Shimi ben Gera was not aware that Shmuel anointed David as Melech. It was a secret. Not everyone knew this. So therefore he thought that David took the Malchus from himself illegally. So he cursed him and said, good for you. You're now getting what you deserve. You're in the Malchus. So David at that moment in time had the option of executing Shimon Gera. And in fact, Avishai. Here there's a very disturbing Targum. The Targum says that it was Yoav. It was not Yoav. Let's see over all. Let's see over here. We have Barkish Davar Dimin Shem Ben Yamin Hu Shimi Ben Shimi Shimi De Akel Yos David. He cursed. Shimi cursed David. Uva Oy Yoav. It's a mystery what the Targum says. It was not Yoav. It was Avishai. Yoav was not present at this moment in time. It was Avishai who was accompanying David. Said to David, David, let me kill him. Let me knock him off of you right now. And David said, don't do it. I don't want you to kill him now because I seal Pi Ruach HaKodesh that this man will one day father, will one day be the ancestor of Mordechai HaYehudi. Therefore, Vayov leMiktalei v'lo Shavkei, David said, do not kill him. Al deIstakel, because he saw Bei, he saw Beruch Nevuah, Vachama, he saw deItmusei, it is hidden within his genes, within his Zera, Mordechai the Esther, leMeipak Binei, to come forth from this man. However, after he fathered his child, which would then be the ancestor, now we no longer need Shim ben Gera. And if later, Uchido Pesach Shimi Mile Melad, when he stopped having children, then Pakei David Lishlomo Berei, David told Shlomo, his son, now's the time to kill Shimi ben Gera. L'mikdal Yosei, to kill Shimi ben Gera. So he didn't get off, it wasn't a clean slate. Okay, it wasn't a clean slate. Ultimately, Shimon Gera did die, but he was the issue to stay because he was still needed to be the ancestor of Mordechai the Esther, who would be the solution, the antidote to the mistake that Shaul made. Shaul kept alive Agag, and by keeping alive Agag, from him came Haman. So therefore, the antidote had to come from Shimon Gera, which would produce Mordechai the Esther, which would counteract, would serve as a remedy for Haman. So this is what it says. See, that's the Targum only tells us why the name over here is Shimi is mentioned.
Yes, issue. Only mentions a few names and why the right. Particularly.
So he's not telling us Kish. He's only telling us Shimi. Shimi is because he was kept alive by David, and the measure we'll see tomorrow. He says he was called Yoyer. He enlightened. Neir Enei Chacham, he enlightened the eyes of the Jewish people through his Torah and through his Koyach. And Kish means he knocked. He banged on the door of heaven by being mispalel to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He banged on the door. So these are the midos of Mordechai. He is compared to the Besamim. He is a descendant of Shimi. He is Kish. He's a person that banged on the door of Shemayim. He's Yemini. He comes from Shevet Binyamin. And he's also Yoyer because he enlightened the eyes of the Jewish people through his Torah, through his Tzila, and through the miracle that he was instrumental in bringing forth. Okay, we'll stop here.